Whenever I can, I like to spend a few days in Ardnakill, the small Donegal village where I grew up. And when I'm there, I take the opportunity to call in on old Seamus O'Hare. I can usually find Seamus at the bar of the local pub, the Golden Pheasant, sitting peacefully with a pint in one hand and his disreputable old pipe in the other. He greets me with a smile and an invitation to join him, and before many minutes have passed, he will be fairly launched into one of his stories. It was a fine spring evening, and the bar was full of comment about the results of the Grant National that afternoon, when Seamus told me the story of Barney O'Callaghan and the horse who wouldn't gallop. Barney, he began, was what they call a character. A rogue, you might say. A fella who'd sell his granny for sixpence. But for all that, the type of crater who you couldn't help liking. He had a great way with the women. One and all, they fell for him, though you would think they would have had the sense to know better. It was never long before they found out what he was really like. He'd swear black was white, looking at you as bold as brass, but with a twinkle in his eye that made you think he was as honest as a saint. I've seen him stand and chat with the well-off Dublin men who used to rent the big houses for the shooting, and sympathise with them for the scarcity of pheasants that year, and him with his back pockets crammed full of the birds. Barney was a great man with the horses. He never held down a regular job with any stable that I heard tell of, but he could always get a few days or weeks work when he wanted to. The owners knew any horse would eat out of his hand, and there was no one like him when it came to getting a lazy or an out-of-condition animal ready for a race. I believe if he'd wanted to, he could have had a good job in Kildare at some of the big stables. But no, Barney preferred to mooch around here, doing odd jobs when he needed to, and mostly making an easy living. And who should blame him? Except when it came to the poaching, or maybe worse. I knew more about Barney than most did, for I liked to spend my time lying by the streams on a summer's day, or dandering through the meadows. Many's the time I used to see him up to his tricks, when I was resting on my back, half hidden in the long summer grass, gazing at the clear sky and following the flight of a lark. One fine night, it was a good many years ago now, I had gone out late to see if I could see a badger, when I heard a noise of something coming, oh, very careful and stealthy, through the woods. It was too loud to be a man, and yet it was no wild animal that I had ever come across, for it was too quiet and controlled. I was curious, I don't mind admitting. I slipped silently behind the nearest large tree and watched. In a few moments, I saw what was making the noise. It was a man, going very slowly and with hardly a sound, and leading a horse. The horse was making very little noise either. I guessed that its bridle and hoofs were muffled with cloths. I'm a man with my share of curiosity, I don't mind owning, and I would say I can move quieter than most. At any rate, I slipped through the woods like a shadow, and neither the man nor his horse seemed to sense that I was there. It wasn't possible to tell who the man might be for a while, for it was dark enough in the wood, with only the odd shaft of moonlight. But after a bit, I heard him whispering, and I caught the words, "Whoa, old fellow," and then, "Soon be home now, my honey." And I had a sort of half guess that it was Barney, for I'd heard him talking like that to horses before. And after another while, it happened that the moon caught his face and lit it up plain enough to see. Now, whatever Barney O'Callaghan was doing in the woods with a horse which didn't belong to him, I was pretty sure it was no good. So I kept on following him until we all three came out at the edge of the wood. I had to drop back a bit as Barney led the horse across a field or two, but he was keeping close to the hedges himself, and that made it easier. I was still behind him when we came out at a big house, which I recognised as Milray Lodge, Mr. Brendan McGarvey's place. McGarvey was a big, burly, red-faced man, and he kept two or three horses, which he would race occasionally when the notion took him. So it was a good guess that this was one of his. I could see that Barney was putting the horse away in its stable, and I thought it was time to slip away before he caught me. I thought a bit about what Barney was up to in the next day or two, and made a few inquiries from some of the racing men in the locality. I didn't think it was up to me to run telling tales of Barney to Mr. Brendan McCarvey, a man I never liked much. But I had a shrewd suspicion the whole business was connected in some way with horse racing. When I heard from one or two different sources that Summer Lightning, McGarvey's newest horse, was proving a big disappointment to its owner, I thought I was onto the truth. Summer Lightning, old Peter Kilrush told me, was McGarvey's pride and joy, and he had been looking to win with him in all the local races at least, and maybe take him across the water if all went well. But in his last few trials, it seemed the animal had hardly been able to do more than canter, and never got as far as a good gallop at all. McGarvey thought Summer Lightning might be sickening for something, but he didn't want to give up on him yet. He was determined to try him out in one or two races at least. It seemed to me only too likely that Barney was doping the horse some way or other to bring down its speed. That would mean that the odds against Summer Lightning would go up, and a betting man like Barney could make himself an easy bit of money if the horse was left alone to run at its real speed on the day of the race. The next night, I hung about near Barney's cottage, taking care to keep out of sight. It was dusk when he came out, a lovely mild evening, when the world seemed full of peace and tranquility. I dandered along the lanes and hedgerows after Barney, sniffing the scent of the bluebells and the wild garlic, and wasn't too surprised when we finished up at Milray Lodge. I hung back until Barney came out, quiet as a cat after a song thrush, with Summer Lightning following softly behind. It was a wonder to me that Barney was able to persuade the horse to come without making the sort of noise someone would notice. But there, as I said, Barney had a great way with horses. I followed a pair of them through the woods where I'd seen them first, and it was then that it began to get interesting. I mentioned, didn't I, that Barney had a great way with the women? Well, about a dozen years before the events of this story, he'd courted and married one of them, a fine upstanding lass of the name of Katie Riley. It didn't last, of course. Whether she threw him out or he left her, I couldn't say. But there it was, they went their separate ways. Katie was left with a young daughter, and she made a living serving in Halloran's pub. It came to me with a shock of surprise that Barney was making for the wee cottage where Katie and the child lived. I watched as Barney tied Summer Lightning to a tree and went nearer to the cottage. He whistled once or twice, and then came an answering whistle. I thought to myself that Katie O'Reilly had changed if she was fool enough to get mixed up with Barney O'Callaghan again after what she'd been through, and it wasn't like Katie to be whistling to him. Then someone slipped cautiously out of the cottage, and I saw that it wasn't Katie. The wean had grown, of course, since I'd last seen her thought of her. 9 or 10 she must be, and there was something wrong with her leg, for she had a crutch to help her along, but she was managing fine with it. I remembered something I'd heard a while back about Katie's daughter being ill. Polio, was it? But I couldn't remember the details. "Oh, da, you managed to bring him again," the lass was saying. "I can't do it much more," said Barney. "They'll find out for sure sooner or later. But I thought I'd come this time anyway, seeing it's your birthday. Don't say your daddy never gave you anything." "Oh, da, I do love you so. This is my best birthday present ever." "Come on now, Anya," Barney said. "Come and I'll help you up. And for pity's sake, don't be galloping the poor beast so hard this time. Leave him some puff for when Al McGarvey wants to have a go on him." Anya laughed. She threw her arms round her father's neck and hugged him until it looked as if she'd burst. I caught a glimpse of her face, glowing with joy, as she hugged Summer Lightning's neck in turn and showered kisses on his soft nose. Barney threw her up on the horse, and then she was off, heading for the bridle pass over the open ground behind the cottage. It was dusk and growing darker, but there should be enough light for a skillful rider for another hour or so yet. Barney stood gazing after her. There was a look on his face that I never saw there before. Then he threw himself down in the grass and waited for Anya to come back. I supposed that when she did, Bonnie would wait until it was fully dark before returning the borrowed horse to its rightful owner. I had guessed wrong. For once in his life, Barney O'Callaghan's actions were motivated by someone other than himself. Certainly, he had no business to borrow Mr. Brenton McGarvey's horse, so that his lame daughter should be able to enjoy something that meant so much to her. In a way, you might say it was typical of Barney to do a good deed in a crooked way. But one thing I was sure about, I had no right to hang about watching Barney or Anya any longer. It was simply not my business. After a while, I melted quietly back into the woods, and through the stillness of the gentle summer night, I made my way homewards.
You've been listening to the Jerry McCulloch Podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes. Just go to the iTunes Music Store and search for Jerry McCulloch. Or you can subscribe or play individual stories at jerrymcculloch.podomatic.com. For more information on Jerry and her books, poems, stories and articles, go to her website at jerrymcculloch.com.